Welcome to Wellness Rebranded, the podcast where a dietitian, a personal trainer, and a mental health therapist get together to explore health and wellness from three different healing perspectives. I'm Elizabeth, registered dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor.
I'm Maria, licensed mental health therapist.
And I'm Tara, personal trainer. We believe in finding ways to nourish a healthy relationship with our mind and body, eating for well-being, not weight, finding joy in moving our bodies, and embracing and understanding our emotions. We are here to help you redesign your relationship with food, fitness, and yourself.
How great would it be if you got science-based guidance from qualified professionals instead of trying out conflicting, overhyped, and unproven trends?
If that sounds as awesome to you as it does to us, join us every week as we dig into strategies to enrich and enhance our day-to-day life and health.
And let's start rebranding your wellness journey.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. I'm hosting a brand new masterclass to support you with gentle nutrition. It's loaded with guidance to eliminate the confusion around healthy eating created by diet culture, while also showing you how to build balanced, nutritious, and delicious meals and snacks without feeling restricted or deprived. We'll cover smart snacking tips, and I'll share strategies to help you be more meal ready with less stress. If you've been wanting to boost your nutrition and feel empowered around food and healthy eating, this workshop will show you how. The live class will take place on April 10th at 6 p.m. and is just $45. There will be a replay if you can't attend live. I can't wait to see you there.
What's up, everybody? It's Tara here with Wellness Rebranded, and we are so excited today because we have this epic free resource for you. It is a mind and body habit tracker and self-care journal. So it allows you to take the next step from listening to our podcast to continuing your rebranding wellness journey out in the world. So please stop what you're doing right now, go into the show notes, download that, and let us know if you love it. Tag us on social media and share the word so that we can make this podcast even better for you.
Thanks. Welcome back to another episode of Wellness Rebranded. I am Elizabeth here with Maria and Tara. And today the episode is a little bit spicy. We are talking about things that get us fired up within our different respective areas of expertise. And Tara, I'm going to jump to you. What jumps out at you?
All right. My most controversial thing that I have is that I am a fat personal trainer. And the fitness industry cannot handle it. It is like the most controversial thing that's ever happened in fitness is that there's a personal trainer who does not look like a bodybuilder. It's crazy. It's totally crazy. My body doesn't make me any less qualified to do what I'm doing. And yet somehow there are many personal trainers and fitness professionals and people in the world that think, oh, no, this should not be happening. So that is my big controversial thing of the day.
Yeah, and it's those beliefs that are not true that we believe anyway. Now you're making me think how controversial it is to have a therapist who suffers from depression or who has been diagnosed with a personality disorder. Or, you know, does that make that person less of a therapist because that person has a diagnosis herself or himself? Right. But maybe we assume that people should live their life or behave or look a certain way depending on what they do.
I think it's different, too, because you can't see that.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That is such a great point. I mean, that's just that belief is steeped in so much weight bias and weight stigma and weight shaming that obviously is against everything we stand for here on the podcast. I just hate it that that's a thing.
Yeah.
It was a downer of a way to start the pod today, by the way, but
no,
my most controversial thing
comes from your heart.
Yeah.
And it's important. It's important to raise awareness, to challenge. We all need to challenge our internalized weight bias and what judgments and assumptions are we making about people based on their body shape, size, weight, how they look. And it's an early invitation in the podcast to look within ourselves, I guess, and also to look outward at the culture. But
also, let me just say, like, I don't want anyone to feel like they can't do something because of the size of their body. Like, just because the perception might be controversial, if you're out there in a larger body and you want to be a personal trainer or something like that, I would say go for it. You know, it truly doesn't affect me on the day to day. It's more like bigger events that I see it coming out.
Well, and you did that. We did that whole episode on your shaming experience, but the same thing happens with dietitians, right? Our bodies are also in the room. I have, you know, been privileged, but there are lots of dietitians in larger bodies who experience exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm sure Natasha, when we did that episode with her, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That is another good one. Maria, what about you? What's got you fired up?
I mean, something that fires me up is maybe when we see symptoms on somebody else and then we automatically assume it's a diagnosis. For example, there's a lot on social media about personality disorders right now, like narcissism, or and then it's like everybody thinks their ex-husband is a narcissistic because he did these things, you know, during their relationship, and then we automatically label a person with a diagnosis. Just because a kid has inattention, hyperactivity, and impulsivity, not always means the kid has ADHD, and so on. So something that I really invite everyone to be careful about, including professionals, is to, I mean, diagnosing somebody is not, should not be taken lightly. Just because somebody has a few symptoms doesn't mean, not necessarily means that there's a disorder there. So let's just stop taking it lightly and labeling people or thinking that everyone has a personality disorder or that somebody has OCD because they're organized. It goes beyond that, and that's why it shouldn't be diagnosed by anybody else except professionals who have been trained to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Social
media plays
such a huge role in that too. We see so many people going, oh, I have this, I have this, you know, these symptoms mean this, when it's like, what? We shouldn't be getting our dietitian, fitness, or mental health, you know, advice from social media.
And there's a lot of people saying, hey, if your mom did this when you were growing up, or your ex did that, then yes, you were a victim of being in a relationship with somebody with this disorder. Well, if it was that easy, we would need so much more information about that person to really say that that person had a disorder. And I know it might bring some calmness in the sense of, oh, now I understand why this person did that. We have to be careful because, I mean, then we start pathologizing people and creating more stigma too, because then we go around thinking, what do you have? And how, you know, that this person is behaving like this because of a disorder. And no, sometimes people behave some ways because they're jerks, and jerkiness is not a diagnosis, right? So it's just a way of being, right? So
one thing I see in the intuitive eating, there's so many ways that I could take this, right? But within the intuitive eating space specifically, I see a lot of times other dietitians or health professionals saying things like, well, I don't really care what you eat, or shying away from talking about nutrition. And I personally, I don't agree with that. I mean, I am a dietitian because I believe in helping people eat in a way that supports their health and well-being. I think too many people overlook our relationship with food and focus way too much on weight. And I think we can change the conversation and the narrative and not guilt and shame people over what they're eating, but still help people and be vocal about that nutrition is part of the conversation and it does matter. You're not likely to hear me saying that, you know, what you eat doesn't matter. I think your relationship with food is super duper important. And I also think that we can encourage people to make, you know, nutrient dense choices and to while enjoying all the other foods too, in ways that feel good and support our health. But I think nutrition is an important part of the conversation. And it kind of bugs me when I see other people ignoring that or shying away from it. That said, I don't think it's a moral obligation. It's not my job to judge you if you don't prioritize your nutrition, right? But if you're interested, and then I think absolutely we should be talking about it and bringing it into the intuitive eating conversation.
Because it's good information to have. You just made me think that some of that education is important because we're dealing with food every single day of our lives, many times a day. How important is if you're going to make an informed decision, whether that looks like on what are you going to eat next or how does it sit in your body, that information is important, I would think.
Yeah, and also there's so much misinformation out there
Oh.
that, yes, please, let's let the qualified people talk about it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or let's encourage the qualified people to talk about it.
Yes. Okay, what are your number twos, Tara? What else gets you fired up?
My I'm fired up about Ozempic and drugs like that right now. I just really feel like people aren't understanding the seriousness of what they're taking. And you know, we know that the results don't last once you go off the drug, which if you have something like diabetes, right, you're on a drug for your whole life anyway to control that. So it doesn't really matter. But for the clients that I have
Potentially.
that I've seen that are taking it just for like, I just want to lose these few pounds, and then they go off it and it comes right back. I just feel like, man, this is not a great solution for many people right now. And I
And Tara,
wish.
in case there's anybody out there that doesn't know what these drugs are, like myself, tell me a little bit more.
Yes, so there are some drugs out there. They are GLP-1 agonist or co-agonist drugs that work in your digestive tract to kind of slow down digestion and make it so you feel full for longer. So people are taking them. We've used them for years with diabetes, right? And now they've discovered that a side effect of these drugs is fat loss. So what they're doing is taking the maximum dose that people were using for diabetes and prescribing it under a different name, right? So like Ozempic became Wegovy, or like Mounjaro is another similar one. And they're using it for fat loss, and it is very effective, but only while you're taking it. So for me, I wish this we didn't even have to have this conversation, because I have clients living with like daily nausea and vomiting because of these drugs, and somehow
Wow.
that feels better to them than just living in a slightly larger body.
Ah, yeah.
It's complicated, right?
So
Because we live in a culture that is steeped in weight bias and fat phobias. And so I would never want anyone who is taking them to feel like we're judging or shaming that. I understand it's a logical choice in a culture that vilifies fatness. But also, I just think it's early in the conversation for these drugs specifically for weight loss, not for diabetes, but specifically for weight loss. And personally, I just feel like we don't have the full story on them yet. I worry that people may be losing a lot of muscle mass with these, which is contraindicated for health outcomes, or can be, or I mean, it is. And there's just not a, I don't think we have a lot of data on it yet, and there's certainly some other specific complications. So, well, I guess what fires me up about it is one that we're not recognizing that it's just feeding into fat shaming in many scenarios, and also it's not a magic solution, and there's still a lot out there to learn, and I don't feel like that's often part of the conversation.
agreed.
Hmm.
It's just something very serious that we're kind of taking lightly.
Possibly like the cultural narrative around it,
Yes.
perhaps. Hopefully, people are not taking it lightly when they're in the conversations with their physicians. Although, if you're many people are not even getting it from their physicians, right? Which that definitely has me fired up.
If you're local to the Annapolis area, join me on my new initiative, the Emotional Fitness Studio. A place where everyone can enjoy monthly in-person wellness workshops guided by different local providers and as affordable as only $10 per event. These interactive, wisdom-packed, and empowering sessions will prove that taking care of our mental health doesn't have to be a tough nut to crack. Check out all the offerings and register on the events section on my website, thecoachingtherapist.com.
Something else that fires me up about this. I was at my annual women exam the other day, and my doctor was like, I mentioned that my knees hurt. And she goes, oh, well, you gained 3 pounds, so it's probably that. And I was like, wow, that was like the limit, like 3 pounds less and my knees feel good, 3 pounds more, and now they're like a little fussy sometimes. And she was like, dude, Ozempic, there's a guy online, you don't even have to go, he'll just send it right to your door. And I'm like, this is coming from my doctor? Like, you don't want to have a deeper conversation with me about that? And she was like, no need, dude. All the nurses here do it. You know, everybody's had great results. I did it for a while too. Interestingly, she was like, and then I stopped losing, so I went off of it. And I'm like, are we not going to address that? But my doctor essentially recommended that I buy from somebody online, which is crazy.
Every time this subject comes up, we say it. We need to do a whole episode and a deep dive on it.
We do.
Mario, what's got you fired up?
The words and phrases that sometimes we use to refer to mental health related situations and even media representations of things. For example, if you pay attention, most of the time that they represent a mental health disorder in a movie, the person is a serial killer, or the person is like causing harm to other people, or the person, you know, all these things of how, you know, the way they portray having a mental health disorder is not accurate most of the time, right? And even the words that we use, I have a big pet peeve, and I know it's just me, but when people say, oh, that person is so bipolar, or that person is OCD, or that person is a schizophrenic. Nobody is a diagnosis. We don't go around saying, hey, that person is so cancerous. Oh, that person is so high blood pressure. I mean, this is a medical illness like any other. Or like, hey, there go that walking heart attack person, because they have had three heart attacks. I don't know. But nobody is a diagnosis. And I really, in my workshop specifically about these topics and about how we contribute with stigma sometimes without even knowing, is changing those words. Is so and so has bipolar disorder, so and so has obsessive compulsive disorder. No, not is. And I see it sometimes even with you know, professionals in the field with me, right? And then, hey, that patient you're about to see, she's bipolar. No, the patient is not bipolar. The patient has bipolar disorder, but she's also a mother. She's also a worker that does whatever. She's also a human being. Because then we start just seeing people based on their diagnosis. And I have a huge problem with that, right? Talking about beliefs and things that we go for that are not helpful or not even based on science. So that's a big pet peeve. Please, let's choose our words when we, and like the movie The Joker, yeah, the guy had a diagnosis and he ended up being killing everyone. Yeah, that's another idea we put out there. People with mental health disorders are violent, and that's not based on evidence. Actually, statistics say that people with mental health disorders are more the victims of violence than the violent ones. But media, every time you see the news, is like, yeah, this person did something. We dig a little deeper, and there was a diagnosis of blah, blah, blah several years ago. Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's the only thing that made the person do that. Nothing else, just having a mental health disorder. No. Right. So
That's
I got
interesting.
fired up already right now. What about you, Miss Tara? What's your next one?
My next pet peeve is kind of like twofold. It's people that feel like they have to kill themselves in the gym or they didn't do a good job. You know, they didn't put enough effort in. And the premise that you need to be working out so many days a week when in reality, like a couple of half-hour sessions is probably plenty. You know, but we have this concept that we have to do more, 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 when in reality, like you get diminishing returns at some point, and more can be dangerous.
Yeah, like it has to be like a specific number of days a week, otherwise it's not gonna work.
And Tara, do you think that that comes from the guidance of, like, I don't know, isn't it like 150 minutes of cardio? Is that what they recommend? Like, is that where you see that stemming from?
150 minutes of like moderate intensity exercise, or 300 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, or like 150 minutes of high intensity exercise, is what like the recommendation is. And I do think it's important to move, right? Like, I'm not saying don't move your body, but when you go to the gym and you're just lifting weights for all that time, you're just being inefficient. And that's not, there's no sin being inefficient, right? You can be as inefficient as you want to, but as busy as life is, especially like as wives and mothers and, you know, workers and all the different hats that we wear, it just feels like, hey, let me get in, hit it and get out, you know? Frequently, like the people that I see that do take like 2 hours for their workout or 3 hours for their workout, are like kind of chatting in between and probably have like a wife at home to pick up some of the house slack. But I really just don't think that you need to be in there for that amount of time unless you have a very specific goal, like you're a professional athlete or something like that. But for like 95% of the population, you should be able to get in and get out and be done with it. And then add in things like walking in the neighborhood, you know, or playing with your kid on the playground or something fun to make up the rest of those recommended minutes.
One thing that I don't know if it exactly gets me fired up is the right language, but one thing that I would like to clear up is that I think a lot of times when people hear me or other weight inclusive, anti-diet, intuitive eating professionals talking, they think that we're anti-weight loss. And that's actually not the case at all. I'm not anti-weight loss. Some people will naturally lose weight when they start focusing on their nutrition or their health-promoting behaviors in a different way than perhaps they have been. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that if that's what your body was meant to do, and what was best for it. It's just really that when we say weight inclusive, we don't think that we should be, you know, just blanket telling everyone to lose weight without looking at themselves and as individuals in their individual circumstances. We think that there's way too much emphasis placed upon weight as an indicator of health, or the belief that we can control our weight in the way we've been told we can is not necessarily true. And that many harms come from making weight loss the primary focus. As in, you know, I'm changing my eating with the sole purpose of losing weight, or changing my movement with the sole purpose of changing the size and shape of my body. That's just something that I always want to clear up. We're not anti-weight loss. We're anti much of the way weight gets talked about in our culture, and anti-weight stigma and fat bias, and anti many of the harms that come from dieting.
I feel like I have people all the time be like, well, intuitive eating is just like anti weight loss. And I'm like, no, it's just not putting that at the forefront. And, you know, people that know both of us, Elizabeth, will say like, oh, well, you know, don't tell Elizabeth this, but I would like to lose, you know, a couple pounds or whatever. And it's like, Elizabeth isn't anti-weight loss. Just anti doing it only for that reason, like putting it at the forefront, you know?
Well, and also I'm pro body autonomy. So if you're out there and you feel like, you know, pursuing weight loss is the right thing for you, I'm not going to judge you for that. You do what feels the best for you. I am here to provide you with information that you may not know about intentionally pursuing weight loss and what we know in the research and what, you know, isn't effective, or what harms or, you know, may come along with that. But I would never judge anyone for doing that. I actually understand it a lot given the culture that we live in, but also like you know, people have complete body autonomy. And so I try to have respect for that.
Good clarification. All right. So I have one last one, and this is not necessarily something that fires me up, but something that I know it's lacking. And I, one of my, wishes is to help minimize these situations and ease that therapists usually are not trained to know how to respond to a mental health crisis if that presents during a therapy session or even a phone call with a client. And that's a little tricky because we do know that the numbers of mental health crisis lately, especially after COVID, have been really high. And I'm talking about homicidal behavior, suicidal behavior, or even somebody having a breakdown and really not being able to move to the next step or even leave the therapy session because of the way they're feeling. I found that many therapists, for lack of a better word, freak out and don't know what to do. So I know in my case it's different because I've trained knowing how to respond to this after my 11 years working in an emergency room, but it's important because more and more people are reaching out for therapy, not being in a good mental health status. And it's important to know how to guide these people and prevent this crisis. It's important. And again, going back to this crisis, the importance of taking care of ourselves, I cannot stress it enough. And that's why we have come up with this free resource, because the three of us believe that even in my case, my opinion, one way to prevent crisis or prevent from getting to a situation where we need urgent help, that doesn't happen one day, you know, from one day to the other. It's something that is gradual. And one way to prevent getting to that is really understanding what self-care means, not only our body and our emotions, our relationship with food. It can really minimize the probabilities of getting into a situation where we are depleted from resources and in a crisis. So we've said it before, go click on the show notes, print out our free resource. Let's start working on taking care of ourselves and maintaining the best we can, because we're going to have ups and downs, a state of where we are able to reach out for resources and have the best health that we can in that moment with what we have. But thank you for tuning in. So go print out our free resource, leave a review, share with friends. We've noticed that we have a lot of followers and we love it, but maybe many of them haven't hit the follow button yet. So go find that follow button and hit it. Because we are going to receive it as love from you, the same love we put on each of these episodes designed for you. We see you in our next episode. Have a great time and take care of yourself.
This episode is brought to you in part by our affiliate relationship with Audible. You may not know this about the three of us, but we are big time readers and we love Audible, especially Elizabeth. She's a big fan of the audiobooks.
I love, love, love audiobooks. I have one going all the time and I get so many books in that way. Makes me so happy to listen while I'm doing other things.
Yeah, it really does make the time pass quickly when you're like washing dishes and also listening to something awesome. So guys, if you want to take advantage of this, we have a free 30-day trial. If you go to our link, audibletrial.com/wellnessrebranded, you will get one credit or two credits if you're already a Prime member, good for any premium selection title, and you get to keep those. You'll also get the entire Audible catalog of podcasts, books, guided wellness, originals, and you'll have unlimited listening, and it will help us keep the show going for you. So please check out our link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening. If you want to connect with me outside of this podcast, you can find me on Instagram at coaching_therapist.
I'm Elizabeth. You can find me at Elizabeth Harris Nutrition or in my Facebook group, Health and Healing with Intuitive Eating.
And I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Tara De Leon Fitness. Guys, if you loved this episode or any of our other episodes, we would love it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps us get the non-diet word out to the rest of the world. So please leave us a review.
Yes, thank you.